Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now it's Wednesday, so we are, of course, joined by in studio by Dr. Eamon Shannon. Eamon, how is semi-retirement going?
Semi-retirement's going grand. I so the situation is that I officially retired from the partnership at the beginning of the year. I'm no longer a partner in the practice, but I do the locums for my colleagues. Mm-hmm. So as anybody knows, people come into me all the summer because I was doing the locum from the middle of June to the middle of September. Say, I thought you were retired. I'm retired, but I term myself a semi-retired, so it's going grand.
So keeping busy, and sure, we'll keep you busy on a Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Plenty of questions in already, Eamon, and if you do have a question, do get in touch with us, 083 300 3300, or you can call 066 71 23666. So we'll get underway. The first question is from an 80-year-old lady who asks about restless leg. Would Dr. Eamon have any suggestion on how to manage the condition?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a two-parter. She also asked, NeoPro patches, are they effective?
Yeah. Excuse me. So the situation is restless leg is a very unpleasant condition. The best way to describe it is as a kind of an itch, and literally it's a restless feeling. Typically it affects older people, and typically it tends to get worse as the day goes on, and oftentimes is worse at night, which means that trying to get to sleep is extremely difficult. One of the practical things, first and foremost, I'd say if you do have restless leg, do talk to your GP about it. Interestingly, there is an association between restless leg and iron deficiencies. So people who are deficient in iron, the simple expedient of replacing the iron, of taking an iron supplement, can help it. Now, I'm not saying that people should just stick themselves on an iron supplement anyway. I think it's more appropriate to talk to your own GP about getting your bloods done. Beyond that, then the thing she talked about, the new Pro Patch, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, that's the trade name for it. I can't think of the generic name for it. But essentially, there are a number of medications that are otherwise used as a treatment for Parkinson's disease that can be effective. The interesting thing is that the dose that you need to use for the treatment of the restless leg syndrome is actually a tiny dose of what you would use if you're treating somebody for Parkinson's disease. That would seem to imply that the mechanism of action, the reason why people get restless legs, is with Parkinson's disease, there's a problem with coordination. There's a part of the base of the brain that coordinates things, and that gets affected. And the presumption is that that must be something similar going on, that there is extra activity within the nervous system. As I said, it's a damnably annoying condition, very unpleasant condition, and it can affect people's quality of life big time. So do talk to your own GP.
So chat to your GP is the advice there. A caller has a son in his 50s and he's suffering from long COVID. Does the doctor have any remedies, or how does it take so long to recover?
Okay, so the answer is that long COVID is... it is a thing, but it's not a new thing. And what I mean to say about that is that COVID is only the most recent of a series of viral infections that have been affecting people for probably millennia, but has been recognised recently. One of the theories I've seen circulated is that it has, that the virus has an impact on what are called the mitochondria, which are little organelles, things within each cell in the body that are kind of the powerhouses of individual cells, and they seem to be affected. The truth of it is that no, we don't know of any particular specific treatment or cure for this. It is recognised that it's a phenomenon, but it's also a part of this bigger group of things called the chronic viral fatigue syndromes. For example, if somebody is misfortunate enough as an adult to get chickenpox, they're often disabled for up to a year afterwards. So whereas a child may get through chickenpox quite quickly if you've managed to get through childhood without chickenpox and then get it as an adult. I've certainly seen people who have not been able to go back to work for a year after getting chickenpox. So that's what I'm saying, that it's a thing, but it's not a new thing in the sense that it's been around. Yeah. The general advice seems to be trying to pace yourself through this thing. The majority of people who have long COVID will eventually recover. But how long is a piece of string? And the difficulty is that you cannot tell in advance how long an individual is going to get. Graduated exercise programs, ensuring that you have a well-balanced diet, don't smoke, drink alcohol in severe moderation, and to be aware of the fact that all these long-term medical conditions are, as we refer to them, as chronic conditions. These have a significant impact on people's mental health as well. So the thing is just because your GP might say to you, I think you might be a bit depressed, don't take offence and say, oh, you think it's all in my mind. No, it's the other way around. Anybody who's got a long-term medical condition of any cause, including long COVID, is much more prone to suffering from depression. So you may separately, in addition, require treatment for your mental health issues, which are as a consequence of the viral infection rather than being the cause of the problem.
Okay, so as you say, kind of multifaceted.
It's layered, yeah.
Of course. Another caller gets in touch and says, got blue and black bruise marks on the back of her hands. She's not on blood thinner, so what could cause this?
Yeah, probably the bit of information we're missing there is what age is this person? Now, what I'm driving at is that as we get older, the amount of elastic tissue in our bodies get less. So if you think of small children, they can turn their limbs into like pretzels, they can twist them over. Whereas we get older, we get stiffer. And the reason for that is because we lose literally a thing called elastin, which is the elastic tissue in our bodies. And the problem is that the elastic tissue is the thing that supports, amongst other things, the blood vessels in the whole body. And if you've got less elastin, what can happen is that the blood vessels can be sheared and tear and release blood, and you bruise as a consequence. So that's one thing. The other possibility is that there is some underlying, spoken about this thing many, many times, so-called autoimmune disorders, conditions where your body turns in and attacks yourself, and this can cause problems as well. If this is an issue, if they're anyway uncomfortable or sore, do see your GP and they can get you checked out about it.
Okay, so that's the advice on that one. Hi, David, could you ask Dr. Raymond, please? I have peripheral neuropathy in my feet, explained that, but waiting on blood results for B12 deficiency. Yeah. Recently, my thigh has started becoming numb for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
And are the two connected, or is there another explanation for the thigh? And that's from a 63-year-old female in general good health.
Yeah, there may well be a connection between the two. So peripheral neuropathy, what that means is that for some reason, the nerve supply to the periphery, so that would be the arms, but especially the legs and the feet, kind of the further away from the head, the worse the problem seems to be. And the difficulty is that the nerves are affected in a number of ways. One of them is that you can generate kind of pins and needles kind of sensation. The other one is that you get a numbness, so that people get the so-called stocking and glove numbness. That is to say, it feels like you've got a pair of socks on you all the time, though you're nothing in contact with the skin. Yeah. The direct cause is usually something noxious or toxic that's causing damage to the nerve endings. Now, yes, vitamin B12 deficiency, even though it is a relatively rare phenomenon, is something that can lead to peripheral neuropathy. There are a number of medications that can lead to peripheral neuropathy. People who have diabetes, particularly if the diabetes isn't well controlled, will particularly develop neuropathy. And it's also associated with alcohol intake, that if people are drinking alcohol to excess, they can classically develop a peripheral neuropathy as well. The treatment for a lot of these conditions is find out what's the underlying cause and then address that. The numbness in the thigh might well be related to this, because again, it does seem to be a neuropathy of some sort. I suppose the only thing that would be slightly concerning is that typically peripheral neuropathy, it's the farthest away parts. It's the soles of the feet or the feet themselves are in trouble. It can theoretically affect any part of the body, but it seems to be the further away from the centre, the worse it gets.
Okay. We've another one in here. 28-year-old female is constantly belching and burping. This has been happening for about 2 weeks, mostly after food, but during the day as well. What can the doctor suggest?
There's probably an element of reflux going on. The best way to describe our gut is think of it as like a 40-foot tube. Food goes in one end and waste comes out the other end, but there's a lot of specialised bits in between. And typically there is a wave of contractions that moves from the mouth down along the length of the gut that propels things in just one direction. The classic example of where that doesn't work is if somebody gets a bout of vomiting and then these waves of what we call peristalsis go in reverse and they start to throw the food upwards. Short of that, you can have situations where you're getting reflux, where some of the acid contents are being pushed back up into the chest, into the gullet, into the esophagus, and that can cause a reflux. again, you'll be looking for things like, no, this is a real, because this is only been at our, even though long enough for 2 weeks, but at the same time, it's a relatively new phenomenon. Just think back 2 weeks ago, is there something that caused upset to your tummy, and look at that. I would suggest in the first instance, maybe have a chat with your pharmacist, because there are a number of over-the-counter remedies that they can advise you to use that can help settle down symptoms. And sometimes the symptoms go of their own accord. Obviously, if there's anything else going on, so kind of things, if this thing turns into vomiting, or if you're having difficulty swallowing food, or there's anything else, then go and see your own GP.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Another caller was in touch. Hi, Dr. Eamon. Problem with her eyes. She has Graves' disease and her eyes won't stop watering. Can the doctor suggest anything?
Yeah, Graves' disease is it's a thyroid problem. It's again the not trying to be smart, but the treatment for this is treat the underlying condition. Ironically, it's a kind of a dry eye syndrome that you get, but the lack of lubrication of the eyes causes us to produce too much tears, so you're tearing like mad, and that's the reason why the eyes are watering. Interestingly, using eye lubricants, and again your pharmacist can advise about that, by moisturising the eyes, if you like, can help with the problem. But it's oftentimes related to an autoimmune disorder, it's an underlying, and it's the treatment of the underlying condition is how you treat the eye problem.
Okay, so that's the advice there. A woman in her 70s asks, what should her heart rate be?
Okay, so the so-called average heart rate is 72 beats per minute, and that varies throughout lifetime, but it also varies, and it varies depending on our state of health, and it also depends on our state of fitness. The fitter that people are, the slower their heart rate is generally. You can have situations where the heart rate is too slow due to an underlying problem with the heart, and it also can be that it's too fast. If the heart rate is typically less than 50, or if it's regularly in excess of 100, that's a problem. That's not in the normal range, I want to call it, that would be kind of 60 to 80, and the allegedly normal heart rate is 72 beats per minute.
Okay, so that's the advice there. And another one just before we take a break: does the doctor have any cures for arthritis?
Yeah, that's an ironic laugh. The answer is no. The issue there, and the problem is that it depends, and of course you've got to then break it down into which kind of arthritis are we talking about. Are we talking about osteo or rheumatoid arthritis? They both end up damaging the joint, but there are different processes. In many cases, unfortunately, arthritis is a slowly progressive condition. Physical therapy, especially physiotherapy, is what I'm driving at, can often help to slow the progress. Medication helps to relieve discomfort and soreness. In the rheumatoid arthritis, it can reduce inflammation, which is the cause of the arthritis, but it doesn't stop it. So as that, as much as anything else, it's again the so-called multidisciplinary approach, going to be the GP plus a physio plus possibly an occupational therapist working together to try to keep the person as mobile as possible.
Okay, so that's the advice there. There are plenty of questions coming in for you, Dr. Eamon, but we'll take a short break and we'll be back after these.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, sponsored by Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney. From a romantic meal for two or a special celebration, you won't find better food served by friendlier people than at Kitty O'Shea's Killarney.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee. Celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, you're very welcome back to Wednesday's Talk About. Dr. Eamon Shanahan is in the building and he's got plenty of medical questions. But if you need to send one in, do get in touch, 066 712 3666, or 083 300 3300. Dr. Eamon, another question in here. A 33-year-old male has a cyst on the side of his head. I get little sharp pains in it from time to time. Yeah. Should I get it checked out or not?
Thanks. Yeah, the likelihood is it's a thing called a sebaceous cyst. There are things like the, for all the world, if you're in an idle moment and you disassemble a golf ball, in the middle of the golf ball you've got a little plastic sack with putty like stuff in the middle of it. Right. That's what these things are like, the little cysts on the surface. They're annoyance. What tends to be the problem is that the comb gets stuck in them, or they hit off something and they're uncomfortable. Those kind of things generally are utterly benign, but they can be awkward and uncomfortable, and a bit of minor surgery can remove the thing and take it away from once and for all. You can get them in other parts of the body. What can sometimes happen is that the cysts, if they get constantly knocked, to get inflamed, they get infected, they burst, and that's a messy thing. Better off to have these things removed if they're of any size at all.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Another person has gotten in touch. A man in his 70s had a right lung taken out due to cancer 7 years ago.
Yeah.
He has COPD lately.
Yeah.
He has swollen feet and ankles, on water tablets for it.
Yeah.
What would cause his ankles and feet to be so swollen? See,
the difficulty is that he unfortunately is operating with 50% of his lung capacity, which is compatible with life. But the difficulty with the COPD part of it means that chronic obstructive pulmonary disease means that there is kind of back pressure in the lungs. But that back pressure not just affects the breathing, it also affects the circulation through the lung. So it means the blood coming out of the heart passes through the lungs and comes back to the heart and then back around the body. There is back pressure there, and that back pressure leads to a cascade of effects that causes the person to retain fluid. And that's where, and just due to gravity, that fluid will end up in the legs. The water tablet is the treatment for that. Again, this is very much the multidisciplinary approach. You're looking at in addition to the lung cancer, why does this man have the COPD as well? What can be done to try to reduce or ameliorate, as they say, his problems there? So it's going to be heart, lung, kidneys. It's going to be treatment of all of those.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Dr. Eamon, a 49-year-old female, has gotten in touch, had 3 cysts removed from her eye. 3 days later, one came back in the same place.
Yeah.
Had that removed 2 days later and it came back again.
Yeah.
Any ideas? She did a full blood test, waiting for results to see, am I lacking in something? Thanks.
Probably not. It's always worthwhile getting the bloods checked just to be sure that your general health is good. There is a series of glands. Let me get this one right. Are they the meibomian glands? I think they are. So in the upper and lower eyelids, there are a series of glands that produce an oily substance that waterproofs the front of our eyes. So our tear glands are up over the outer parts of the eyes, and the tears wash across to the front of the eyes and they disappear down to a little hole at the inside of the eyes, at the corner of the eye. But then also there are these glands that produce an oily substance that waterproofs the front of the eye. The oily substance comes out through tiny little pores that are right along the edge of the eyelid in between the eyelashes, and these can get blocked up. And when they get blocked up, you get a build-up of the oily substance behind it, and that then becomes inflamed. Again, I'm not sure this kind of has come in and out of vogue. There are a number of eye washes that your pharmacist can supply you with. I mean, there was a vogue at one stage of advising people to use the baby shampoos, the non-stinging shampoos. The idea being that this oily substance is an oil, and that by using a very mild detergent like a baby shampoo, and why a baby shampoo? Because it shouldn't sting your eyes. You can dissolve the little plugs of oil in between these pores. Hot compress can be useful as well, just a warm cloth held up to the eye. Again, the same idea, break down these plugs of oil to let the oil discharge naturally. And you can get this, what they call it, blepharitis is the name of the inflammation along the edge of the eyes. You can get this kind of chronic blepharitis, and it kind of becomes self-perpetuating. If this continues to be a problem, you may well benefit from seeing an ophthalmic optician, an ophthalmic physician, I should say, not an optometrist. The optometrist will sort you out for the glasses, but the ophthalmic physicians, of which there's 3 or 4 in the county, can help you manage this condition.
Okay, so some solid advice there. Lots to do there. Another caller has gotten in touch. A female has a terrible tight sensation in the front of her throat, and again, constantly burping like an earlier listener. Sometimes it's fine, and then for a week or so, it's very serious. She can feel she's going to choke. Her doctor said it was reflux. She took PTIS, but that didn't work.
Yeah.
Can Dr. Eamon suggest anything?
Now we're beginning to sort of drift into the realms of what I'd call pink flags, if not red flags. If you've got the sensation of choking, it means there's some fairly significant inflammation of the esophagus, of the gullet. The medication that she would have used, so-called PPIs, are there to reduce the amount of acidity that your stomach is producing. If there's a direct relation, if you take the these medications and the problem goes away, great, happy days. And then you're trying to find what's the minimum amount of that medication you can get away with. But if that's not relieving the situation, you probably need to have what's called a gastroscopy. Somebody needs to put a camera down just to make sure there's nothing else going on.
Okay, so that's the advice there. A lady who is 39, a truly listener, gets in touch and asks Dr. Eamon, if you get a phosphate seizure, what does this mean?
Oh, good question. So phosphate is, the quick answer is I don't know, because I'm not heard that combination previously. I know what a seizure is, I know what phosphate is. But a phosphate seizure, phosphate is one of the elements that are needed. It's a mineral, isn't it? It's one of the minerals needed for bone metabolism. So calcium and phosphate levels go together and they're necessary for the so that our body can lay down the correct amount of bones. I'm presuming that if there's something that causes an excess or a deficiency, possibly an excess of phosphate, that this can upset other body chemistries and that this can lead to a seizure. This is something you'll probably need to talk to a specialist such as a neurologist about.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Another lady gets in touch. David, can you ask Dr. Eamon, please? I know an elderly lady in her late 70s who has a short-term memory. She forgets what she said or I said in 5 minutes. Is there anything she could get from the doctor? The caller says she's also very aggressive.
Yeah, okay, quick answer is no. The difficulty of short-term memory loss is usually an indication of what is termed mild cognitive impairment. One of our problems is that we have two kinds of memory, of the so-called short-term memory and the long-term memory. Short-term memory is the stuff that allows us to remember what we did 5 minutes ago. The long-term memory is the stuff that allows us to remember what we did in our first day of school. Short-term memory is very transient. People can get distracted. Anybody who's even very well and they have to remember a couple of things simultaneously, they often have difficulty. Something will slip out of their memory. But the things that once they're committed to the long-term memory will stay there forevermore. Short-term memory loss, however, is an indication that the person may be developing an issue with it may possibly an early dementia. There isn't any medication as such that will stop that happening. There's medications that can slow the progression. I hear what the interesting bit was the comment about the aggression part of it. Oftentimes these are a manifestation of the psychobabble bit, this unresolved grief. And I think we need to bear in mind that there are many people who are carrying burdens oftentimes for 5, 6, 7, 8 decades that have never ever been resolved. And it may be possible that by trying to address where this conflict or grief is coming from might help. Part of the problem is the person may well be depressed, and if you're depressed, your memory is certainly going to be affected as well. So again, it's an interesting question, but unpacking that's going to need a lot of work.
Of course, yeah. Another 65-year-old female gets in touch. She says, I felt I was going to drop all of a sudden yesterday. Felt weak, like blood draining from my head. Yeah. Lasted only a few seconds. Yeah. Feel lightheaded now. And then blood pressure is okay, she says. Any advice?
Yeah, so the so-called vasovagal episode. So vasovagal is, or a syncope is the fancy name for a faint. And literally what's happening is that for some reason there's just not enough blood getting to your brain. There are a number of standard investigations that your GP can organise for you, and you may need to go to hospital to have to investigate it further. One of the things, for example, is that you can have a momentary change in the amount of blood coming out of your heart due to some electrical disturbance in the heart. And so there are tests that can be done for that. It may be a biochemical thing, but that tends to be longer. Most of the time there's something that's just temporarily reducing the amount of blood getting to your brain. That's why you get the symptom. Worst case scenario is you get what's called a drop attack. Literally you get this feeling of faintness and then suddenly you're on the ground and you have no recollection of falling on the ground. And usually and classically and typically if you get a drop attack, you'll recover instantaneously as well. But that's an indication there's been a longer interruption in the blood supply to the brain, to the point where you actually do black out. Now, obviously if anything like that happens, it does warrant a further investigation. If this continues to be a problem, go and talk to your GP.
Okay, so that's advice for that lady. Another caller gets in touch. Hi, David. Could you ask Dr. Eamon, my daughter's in college with a very bad cough and sore throat. It started about 4 weeks ago with a heaviness in her chest. Yeah. I told her to go to the doctor, but she wouldn't go. Yeah. Do you think it's gone past the chemist now? She needs to see a doctor, or does she need to see a doctor? Yeah. Or is there something I can get the chemist to help?
The quick answer is no. I mean, the situation is that a cough that's persisting for that length of time, it may indicate some sort of chronic underlying infection, but that's very, very, very unlikely. Thankfully and mercifully, we don't see those kind of problems anymore. I'd be more thinking in terms of an allergy of some sort, and I'd be interested to know, has this young woman had a previous history of sort of typical coughs, particularly back over the child over their childhood? For example, this may well be a form of asthma. So the thing is that for that reason, they probably need to see a doctor and get themselves checked out. I know this mom is worried sick about her daughter. I know that her daughter's saying, I'll be grand, leave me alone, I'll be okay. But to be fair, I think I agree with the mom, she should be getting this checked out.
Okay, so that's advice. finally, Dr. Eamon, one last one. I got rear-ended in my car and ever since I've a tingling down my back and legs when I'm resting. Had an MRI in my neck. It showed no nerve damage. Any advice?
Yeah, okay, so I need to come back and talk about the limitations of medical technology. Unfortunately, not every scan, no matter how good the scans are, will show up every single damage. The likelihood is that with the symptoms you're describing there, is there some subtle little pressure on nerve endings coming out of the spine. There are probably some very minor movement within the spine that's putting pressure on nerves, that's giving this tingling sensation. Again, I think the other question that we haven't answered there is how long is it since this incident happened? Because not untypically people, you know, it's going to be a year or more before people recover from any kind of high impact injury, typically a road traffic accident.
Okay, as you can see, Dr. Eamon, lots of questions, but we'll hold over until your next time in with Deirdre.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for joining us today.